We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
FM News Talk 97.1 Podcast.
Your work is vitally important to this committee and the American people because no one is above the law.
In America, nobody is above the law.
I believe we in Congress have a duty to demand accountability and safeguard one of our nation's highest principles, that no one is above the law.
No one is above the law.
That's right.
Not you, not the Congress, and certainly not the president.
Anyone else who did these things would be prosecuted for them. We must ensure that no one is above the law.
This is the United States of America. No one is above the law. No one.
No one is above the law.
It is clear that any other person who engaged in such conduct would be charged with a crime. We will continue our investigation and we will hold the president accountable because no one is above the law.
What difference at this point does it make?
You know, just ignore that.
All right. Welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. Just wanted to compare and contrast there for you a little bit. Nobody is above the law. Just so you know, nobody is above the law in this country, no matter what who they are.
No, I'm not over it.
I just want to point that
nobody,
out.
Nobody, not anybody.
No, nobody.
No.
No, nobody is above the law.
Not me, not you.
What I did love nobody. Yesterday, what I did love yesterday was this Congressman Ratcliffe, who kind
good.
Of nailed, he kind of nailed it on this particular point that he made yesterday when he had Bob Mueller sitting in front of him. Cut 27.
Americans
please.
Need to know this as they listen to the Democrats and socialists on the other side of the aisle as they do dramatic readings from this report, that volume 2 of this report was not authorized under the law to be written. It was written to a legal standard that does not exist at the Justice Department. And it was written in violation of every DOJ principle about extra prosecutorial commentary. I agree with the chairman this morning when he said Donald Trump is not above the law. He's not. But he damn sure shouldn't be below the law, which is where volume 2 of this report puts him.
Wow. Congressman Ratcliffe there from down in Texas, kind of bringing the heat yesterday. I was talking to Jeff Allen, our program director, about this a few minutes ago, because he was listening to it on his radio station as he drove around, and I listened to it. I watched it yesterday morning here on television, and then I listened on my way home. There was if you thought watching it was uncomfortable, like if you thought Bob Mueller looked awkward and uncomfortable at moments, it sounded worse if you just listened to the audio with the pauses, and he just really sounded kind of lost, mm-hmm. like, you know. Well, like I said to Tim Jones earlier, like your mother wrote your book report for you and the teacher asked you to tell her what the book was about. Let me look at my notes.
Right.
Can I bring you the Cliff Note version of that, teacher? Thank you very much. That's kind of where we are. If you watched this thing yesterday, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. We got to Todd Starnes coming up. Congresswoman Ann Wagner is going to join us as well at about 7:48 this morning. Stay tuned for that. And in the next hour at 8:37, the White House is sending Scott Turner. He's in charge of opportunity and revitalization for the White House. He's in St. Louis today. He's going to come by the studio here about 8:37 this morning. We'll get his thoughts on maybe the testimony yesterday, but certainly what's going on here in St. Louis today and what's bringing him to town. So stay tuned for that, please. Got that coming up. Right now, though, I want to get to my guest, please. Former Missouri Senator Jim Talent joining us now, of course, with the Bipartisan Policy Center. Jim, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark.
6 hours of must-see TV yesterday. I'm sure you were glued to your set the whole time.
Well, not quite. Okay, but I'm, and I've heard everything I need to now with your.
Thank you. I kind of summed
clips.
It up for you.
I mean, I just wait till the next day and listen to the Cox show and just get up on everything in
That's
only
awesome.
A few minutes. They certainly had the talking point down, didn't they?
Well,
I mean,
pretty,
I've been there. I mean, you get the memo beforehand, often literally a memo. So here's what we're going to emphasize. So they remember that line. That was the easy one.
Well, they did, and clearly they had their questions laid out. I mean, they were the Democratic members were pretty methodical in how they do that. I assume the Republicans had sort of plotted out a strategy as well, which was to question the beginnings of the investigation and why Mr. Mueller wasn't more interested in the Steele dossier and some of the very foundings of the investigation he was put in charge of carrying out.
Yeah, and when I kept hearing about nobody being above the law, I was thinking of the investigations Bill Barr is doing now into what some in the upper echelons of the FBI were doing in initiating this investigation on the basis of the Steele dossier in the first place, and you know, securing the authority to wiretap from the FISA court without. At, you know, the least you can say is without being as upfront with the court as they should have been. And I think there are some people who are going to find out about the law in the next couple of years. I mean, I think McCabe's on the hot seat, Strozek, maybe Rosenstein, and we'll see. I mean, he's got a couple of U.S. attorneys investigating, and we'll see where that goes. But Barr seems like a pretty determined man to me.
Yeah, I think Gohmert made some pretty valid points. Louis Gohmert out of Texas yesterday, talking about some of the people that Mr. Mueller surrounded himself with in this investigation. Cut 33, please.
Let me ask you, when did you first learn of Peter Strzok's animus toward Donald Trump?
In the summer of 2017.
You didn't know before he was hired?
I'm sorry?
You didn't know before he was hired for your team?
Know what?
Peter Strzok hated Trump.
Okay.
You didn't know that before he was made part of your team. Is that what you're saying?
I did not know that.
You know what, Jim, one thing that I observed is that it doesn't sound like, and maybe this is wrong, I'm sure you probably met Bob Mueller at some point, but it didn't sound like Mueller was as deeply involved in some of this investigation as I suspected that he probably was. But he was in charge of hiring the people that helped him carry it out. And when, what we heard yesterday was that maybe 14 of the 19 attorneys he hired were people who had been active in or contributed to Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. I don't know how you get around calling that a conflict of interest.
Yeah, well, I mean, you don't want, in an investigation like this, you want people who identify primarily as law enforcement or prosecutor people, right? You don't want people who identify too strongly as political partisans, if you can avoid it. Now, it's hard to get people, I want to say in fairness to Mueller, it's hard to get people who are willing to just, who are good and are willing to give up everything they're doing for some period of time to come in and staff an investigation like this. But, I mean, he really should have said to himself, I don't want to get a question like that a year from now or 2 years from now. So I want to hire with that in view, right? And I don't think he did. And so he's opened himself up to this. And I also think it was pretty clear that he hasn't testified in a while. And you need to be on a mental edge when you testify in a high-profile hearing like that. It's, you know, it's not an easy thing. And he clearly was not there. I mean, it felt the whole time like his major sentiment was, I really don't want to be here, which is undoubtedly true. But you don't want it to look like that, right?
Well, you know, I would agree with that, and I guess from I think that a lot of this, you're not going to be surprised to hear me say this, a lot of this has been, even this hearing yesterday was politically motivated. They hoped to get something out of Mueller that they obviously didn't end up getting at all. But when it was over, this was the response from Eric Swalwell, who until, what, 2 weeks ago was running for president of the United States. Cut 12, please.
I think success is that the American people will view this as volume one, or I'm sorry, that the American people will view this as act one, not act three. And as they heard names today like Manafort and Kalimnik and Gates, they will want to know, well, let's hear more about that, and that those witnesses will start to come forward. I think we should have an impeachment inquiry, and those are the next witnesses we need to hear from.
Yeah, there, and Senator Kamala Harris, go to cut 14 as well, please.
I am very clear that there are outlined incidents of obstruction of justice, and no matter what this current Attorney General and the President of the United States try to say, the American people are smart enough to know what is and what is not truth.
So they're not giving up on this, Jim. I mean, I kind of hoped that yesterday they'd reach a point where they would make the political realization, or come to the political realization, that according to polling, nobody really cares. The American public knows the report was issued. They think it was a nothing burger, and they seem to be ready to move on. And these Democrats, maybe they're just doing it from a political point to gin up their base. Is that why they continue to pursue this, in your opinion?
Well, most of the people that you just quoted are running for president. I think Swalwell still is, isn't he?
No, he just dropped out. He just dropped out, okay. But Harris still
so
is.
So he's still singing the same song,
right.
And that is, from a political standpoint, a smart thing for them to be saying if they're running for president, because they're trying to get a piece of the base so that they can survive until the later rounds. Look, I do think, and I don't know that anybody said this yesterday, but people who are interested in this ought to Google John Dowd, who was the president's lawyer through much of this, and see what he has to say about how the administration cooperated, because that's relevant when you're looking at something like obstruction of justice. Well, they made everybody available. They released, I don't know how many documents, all the documents that were asked for. They did not assert executive privilege when they could have. They cooperated more than fully with this investigation. I don't know if anybody asked Mueller that. And so far from obstructing it, they did everything they could to assist it. And I think the reason they did that was because they knew the investigation would find nothing. In other words, they wanted to cooperate because they knew there wasn't anything to hide, which is the opposite of obstruction of justice.
Yes.
And that's the reason they didn't prosecute, because it would have been laughed out of court. I mean, you have to, again, if you really know you don't have anything to hide, and you're going to talk to your lawyers, you're going to do it the right way, of course, but yeah, you're going to cooperate because you want the investigation to reach its conclusion, which will be favorable to you. And this investigation's conclusion was favorable to the president, right?
It was.
So I think that there's an underlying reality here that they didn't obstruct justice, and they went, in fact, in the opposite direction. And I think there are some people who are on the committee who are obsessed with the idea of moving against the president for impeachment. So I don't think we're going to see the end of this, but I just don't think it's going to go anywhere at the end of the day. There's no there.
At least leadership seems to acknowledge that, because apparently Nancy Pelosi's told him she has no intention of moving forward on this. But the obstruction question continues. And, you know, Judicial Watch and several people pointed out that it wasn't part of his original charge. Obviously, if it came if the accusation is that it happened during the process, that he somehow tried to obstruct justice. But like you pointed out, and I'm glad you did, they asked Bob Mueller several times yesterday. I believe Matt Gaetz is the one that asked him, did the president ever invoke executive privilege? Did he refuse to provide his attorney? Did they do anything to impede you from completing your investigation? And short of not doing an interview, ultimately, which he was never required to do, he cooperated fully. I just think that this is it's just a dead end.
Yeah, I really do. And again, people, and I think the Democrats would do well to consider this. When they start talking about nobody being above the law, well, it's. Let me just give one example. Okay, so they got wiretap authority under the intelligence statutes against American citizens using primarily the Steele dossier, which they knew and did not tell the court was the product of opposition research in a political campaign, and which the FBI says to this day is salacious and unverified.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, I'm not much of a lawyer, but I know that, you know, you can't, those procedures are very detailed and very carefully drawn up, and you can't go to the FISA court and get wiretaps against Americans. And in essence, you're end running the Fourth Amendment, which is permissible for national security purposes under certain limited conditions. And if you violate those conditions, it's a real problem. And this is why Barr says, look, I know that this, he called it spying. He'll call it whatever you want, right? But I, he says, I don't know whether this is adequately predicated. And that's his way of saying, I don't think they followed the rules. And so he's got people investigating this. And I think we're going to see a lot more people declining to be interviewed by the FBI in the course of that, because it's closing in on them now.
I hope so.
I've said, and I've said on this show, Mark, to me, that's what's important, and not for narrow, because I don't think it's going to have any impact on the 2020 elections. I think the American voters are going to make decisions based on who they think is going to be better for their family and communities, okay, rather than on this. But it is very important that the Bureau culturally have powerful norms in favor of following the rules, particularly in its in everything, but especially in the counterintelligence arena, or the intelligence arena, and I don't think that happened here. And to me, that is the part of this that the Justice Department needs to focus on. I've been very glad that Barr is doing it. He's an institutionalist. I mean, he's not a Trump guy.
Right.
I mean, he's a Department of Justice guy, and I think this is what he's going to do.
Jim, let me turn real quick to something that conservatives are passionate about, and that is trying to fix the spending problem in Washington, D.C. The president signed on to an omnibus bill that he's bragging he had to do it to fund the military, and that's what he said 18 months ago. But here we go again, blowing the deficit up. I mean, are we ever going to stop overspending in this country, or are we just going to end up like Venezuela?
Well, since you mentioned the armed forces, and you know that that's like catnip to a cat to me, I do have to say, it is enormously important that they got rid of the last 2 years of the sequester and that they can now pass actual appropriations bills instead of continuing resolutions to cover the armed forces, because when the Pentagon has to operate under continuing resolutions, it screws up their whole acquisition process. And
right.
I can't emphasize enough that we as a nation are besieged by threats that are growing. Probably the biggest and the hardest to deal with are the Chinese, because they are what's called a peer competitor. Okay, they can compete with us and do on traditional terms. So this president is right to be emphasizing that. On the budget, here's what I'll say to you. Okay, to fix the budget, they need to deal with the large and growing gap between what we're collecting for the safety net programs and what we're spending on them. I mean, they're like 60% of the budget. So we're talking Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and a couple of other programs. If they're not going to do that, then I am, and they should, okay? To me, this is, if I wanted to point out something I think the president should have done that he hasn't done,
yeah,
it's that, okay? If they're not going to do that, then it doesn't make any sense to cripple all the other functions of government because we're upset about the deficit, because you're not doing anything about the debt,
yeah,
if you don't do anything about those programs, okay?
Well, so I see your point, and it's frustrating. We could spend a whole half hour talking about it. Maybe next week we will. How about that?
Okay, that'd be great, and I know you've got a program to run and sponsors and commercials to play. So,
Jim, thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Have a great week. Jim Talent there. We'll be right back after this.
I would say our country should be more fearful of white men across our country, because they are actually causing most of the deaths within this country. We should be profiling, monitoring, and creating policies to fight the radicalization of white men.
That's us. That's right.
Todd Starnes, lo and behold, you and I are the biggest threat to America. Did you know that? That's Rashida.
Yeah,
that was Elon Omar from a couple years ago.
Who knew?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Ilhan Omar, we have that video posted up at the website, toddstearns.com. And, you know, we knew that she was an anti-Semite, didn't realize she was a full-blown racist.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is the same person who tried to marginalize and minimize what happened on 9/11 as some people did something. That's the language she used. And I think it illustrates, when you look at these two comments together, and there have been others made, but when you look at those two comments together, I get the impression that she is, quite frankly, sympathizing, or at least appears to sympathize, with Al-Qaeda. It's just really unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't know how you get around from drawing that conclusion. If you listen to what she's saying, she's basically saying that white men in this country pose a greater threat than radical Islam. And then she errantly says that white men are responsible for most of the deaths in this country. I will guarantee you most of the gun violence in this country is not committed by white men. Bottom line.
No, and look, this fits into a narrative that's being advanced by the Democrat Party. And to give you a very recent example, over the weekend, there was an incident at a grocery store in Atlanta. A black lawmaker was in the express line with more items than she was supposed to have. I hate it when that happens. That always happens in my Brooklyn neighborhood. The liberals always think they have privilege, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, this white guy sees what she's doing and says, now this is according to the early news reports, this white guy went up to the black lawmaker and started screaming at her and told her, get out of this country. Go back to where you came from. And, of course, the lawmaker puts this tearful video on Facebook. The news reports come out. The AP story, the very first words of the Associated Press story in every newspaper across America over the weekend, a white man, ... Well, it turns out that the woman was lying. And store workers, and according to the video, which backs all of this up, the surveillance video, it turned out she was the one who told the white guy to go back where he came from. And beyond that, the guy wasn't a white guy. He was a Cuban American who happens to be, wait for it, a lifelong Democrat.
That's hilarious. I played a little bit of that interaction the other day between the two of them on the parking lot. I mean, you know, if he had not had the guts to come forward, and in this day and age, that does take a lot of guts. Once somebody accuses you of an ism or a phobe, you're labeled. And unless you're willing to fight for your good name, you're railroaded out of town. So at least this guy had the guts to step up and challenge her.
But here's what gets me. Do you think the rest of the nation knows that? Do you think they followed up with the story? Because of course not. It took me all of 30 seconds to go on the guy's Facebook page and realize this guy hates Donald Trump, and yet the media tried to connect this to that rally that the president held in North Carolina. So look, her name is Erica Thomas. She pulled a Jesse on the people of Georgia. She's a lady, Jesse. And at the end of the day, we've got a perfect example, a textbook example of Democrat on Democrat fake hate.
Yeah, very, very true. Speaking of which, you said it's about hate. If you listen to the Mueller hearings yesterday, you picked up on some of the people in Congress who really hate Donald Trump. And one of them, although I didn't hear her asking questions yesterday at one of these two committees, was Rashida Tlaib, who we've uncovered at a Trump rally before she got elected to Congress. And I know you've had this story on your radio show. Listen to, for people that haven't heard it, listen.
I will say the Bernie Sanders
That's Rashida Tlaib being dragged, physically dragged out of a Trump rally, screaming at Trump fans that they're the ones who are crazy.
Yeah, look, I mean, these are the faces of the new Democrat Party. Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, AOC, who is terrified of a garbage disposal, and the fourth member of the squad that no one can remember. This is the radicalization that has taken place in the Democrat Party. They are, in fact, the four speakers of the House of Representatives. Nancy Pelosi is not in control of her party right now. And I think the Democrats, especially the elders of the party, are very confused, and they don't know what to do. They don't know how to get these folks to toe the line, and I'm not sure they're ever going to be able to do that. But what they do risk is turning the entire party to the left. But I got to tell you something. Based on what happened yesterday and that debacle of a Mueller hearing, I think the Democrats are at risk of losing their majority in Congress.
Yeah, I could see that. I really could. You know, Todd, before we run out of time here, I have to ask you, since you live there in New York City, what in the world is going on that we have police officers being yelled at and water dumped on their heads? And I mean, I think they've shown incredible restraint, but there's got to be a limit to that.
Oh, absolutely. We have Bernie Carrick coming up on the radio show today, the former NYPD commissioner. And I'll tell you this right now. There is a war on police here in New York City. And if I were in charge of the police union, I would tell those officers, pull out. Just pull out of those neighborhoods and let the thugs patrol the streets. If they think they're going to be better off that way, let them do it.
Yeah, and then that's the shame of it is that, you know, good people are going to end up suffering because of all of this, and they're not the folks causing the problem to begin with. What a shame. Well, yeah, we'll have to listen to that. Bernie is a good guy. I've heard him on before on these issues. Giuliani's been pretty tough on this, too, because he doesn't understand what in the world Bill de Blasio is doing up there.
Well, here's the there's been a lot of criticism directed at the police officers for turning their back. I mean, it was a dangerous situation. That could have been something other than water, and those guys were in a very dangerous situation. It's our understanding those are rookie police officers just out of the academy, still on probation, and it could be they just did not know what to do in that situation. But honestly, I suspect this is part of a bigger issue where you have NYPD leadership getting orders from City Hall telling the officers to stand down and not engage. New York City is a pretty dangerous place now, and people may not be aware of that, but if you come here on vacation, you got to be careful. It is it's dangerous.
Well, thank you for that warning, and we always worry about the same things here in St. Louis when it comes to political leadership and what they're telling our local police officers here. Todd, we appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you.
Glad to do it.
All right, Todd Starnes, Fox News Radio there. You hear his updates here every day, and always good to get his point of view on these things. There's some crazies up there in Washington.
Did Russians really tell that to Christopher Steele, or did he just make it all up, and was he lying to the FBI?
Let me back up a second, if I could, and say, as I said earlier, with regard to Steele, that's beyond my purview.
Bob Mueller yesterday in Congress, and I tell you what, I'm sure that Congresswoman Ann Wagner was sitting in the gallery watching that, probably. Ann, good morning to you.
Good morning. Yeah, what a disaster for the Democrats yesterday, and a complete public spectacle. It was stunning to me. I have to tell you, parts of it were absolutely stunning. And I want to know who wrote it. Who ran this investigation? It clearly wasn't Robert Mueller. I mean, I salute him for serving his country honorably in a number of ways, and we thank him for that. But man, he lacked all command of the entire process, his people, the report. I told a crew last night that I think that frankly the person who learned the most from the testimony yesterday about the Mueller report was Robert Mueller himself.
That's a great point. Certainly not what the other party had hoped for, I think, out of those hearings. And,
well, and the whole concept of you know, how are the hallmark of our justice system, which is presumption of innocence.
Yeah.
And when Mike Turner, one of my colleagues, you know, really went into the where is the Department of Exoneration in justice? It is not a prosecutor's job or an attorney general's job to exonerate. That's what we have judges and juries for. I mean, this was really a miscarriage of justice, and completely unfair.
Couldn't agree more. And I want to take a minute to talk about the proposal I've seen. You've had some Facebook ads up on it specifically about the paid parental leave.
Yes.
How would your plan work? We want to know.
So this is the only conservative approach to paid family leave. Marco Rubio and I have worked on this, along with some others in Congress, for nearly 2 years. We are the only industrialized nation in the world that does not offer access to paid family leave, and I find that unacceptable, to be perfectly honest. And the way the plan works is that young moms and dads who take advantage can take up to 1, 2, or 3 months off upon the birth or adoption of a child. And what they're doing is taking an advance on their own Social Security benefits to help them during the difficult transition. And upon their retirement, then these workers can choose several different options. They can repay their parental benefits through a kind of a temporary benefit reduction on their Social Security check they receive, or they can delay their retirement to offset the costs, or they can do what I probably would have done back when I was having babies in my 20s. They can pay it back anytime later on in life, in their 40s, 50s, when they've built up a little bit of wealth and savings. And I want to be really clear, Mark, we worked with the Social Security Administration and the actuary there, and we have it in writing. This does not affect our nation's fiscal health. It does not affect the current or future solvency of the Social Security Trust Fund, and it does not affect projected benefits for retirees, either current or future ones.
But these people have not paid much, if anything, into the system yet. If they're drawing benefits, that's got to be coming from somewhere or someone, right?
No, there are very clear requirements, eligibility requirements on this. And if you're going to take advantage of this, you have to have paid at least 12 quarters of coverage preceding the birth or adoption of a child. You have to have paid in to at least 12 quarters into the workplace, paying into Social Security. So again, this is an advance on their benefits. They have paid into the system. And frankly, it is really positive for those at the lower economic end of the scale, income-wise, that really don't have these kinds of benefits. Many of them have them through their employers, but so many, that person that's, you know, a cashier somewhere or working in a restaurant or are working to, you know, as a checkout clerk, doesn't have these kinds of opportunities. And let me tell you how, Mark, this is good for the taxpayers. What we have found, and through Pew Research, is that currently an estimated 17% of workers who lack paid family leave benefits end up turning to where? Government assistance programs. And if you take the unpaid time off, if you look at the share increases, it's about nearly 50% of workers at the lower income. So, you know, I want people to have some amount of money during this time, this exciting and challenging time of having a new child. I want them to go back to the workforce. And I think some U.S. workers have access to paid, but many, many do not. And I think that ultimately this is important for those that are living paycheck to paycheck. I don't want them on public assistance.
No.
That hurts the taxpayer even more. And reducing dependence on those safety net programs is going to save money long-term for taxpayers.
Oh, I always wish we had more time because I got a lot of questions on this. So maybe when you're back here sometime in August, we can get you in the studio?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just, you know, this is the first time Republicans and conservatives have recognized that we've got to come up with a paid family leave program. It's not right. And we've got to come up with a conservative way that's not going to affect employers and taxpayers, you know, and cost them more money.
Yes.
It's not a payroll tax like the Democrats want to do. All they want to do is raise your taxes, put mandates on business. And this is the only conservative approach.
And I'm out of time. We'll have you on again to talk about it. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Take care.
You bet. Thank you, Congresswoman Ann Wagner. We'll be back right after this with Amy Polker.
Get more at 971talk.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.